Coming up,
the holiday edition, the best of 2013. It's time to watch before you buy.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Before You Buy is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. Before You Buy is brought to you by Hulu Plus. Hulu Plus lets you binge on thousands of hit shows anytime, anywhere on your TV, PC, smartphone, or tablet. Visit HuluPlus.com/BeforeYouBuy to start your free 2-week trial. This is Before You Buy, episode 102, recorded for air Christmas Eve, December 24th, 2013. The best of Before You Buy. So Apple last week at the Worldwide Developers Conference announced one new computer, a new MacBook Air, based on the fourth generation Intel chip, the Haswell. And here it is. Of course, I had to order it right away. This is the 13-inch. They did 11 and 13-inch MacBook Airs. And if you look at it right off the top, you might say, well, gosh, how is that different? Because it does look very much the same as previous generations of MacBook Air. In fact, even down to the ports, it's got two USB 3 ports, the new MagSafe 2 connector. There's a headphone jack. On the other side, mini display port, which is I'm a big fan of. Those work very nicely. Can get HDMI out of there, too, with a converter. Another USB, that's an SDXC card reader. You might have noticed if you have a very, very sharp eye, there's a slight difference here. There's two, you can't see it, there's two little tiny dots, dual array microphones. The reason is they're doing the same thing on the iPhone and the MacBook Retina where they there you can see it. Look at that. That one of them is for noise canceling. And actually, I found this on the MacBook Retina. It's pretty much the same on this MacBook Air. The sound quality is quite good. In fact, I don't feel the need to use headsets on making phone calls and so forth using Skype with this. It really does give you quite good sound. Nobody's ever complained. There are some differences. The battery is about 8% larger, just a slight bit. They are doing a big difference in battery life, and that's really the thing that people are paying attention to right now. On the 11-inch MacBook Air, Apple's claiming 9 hours of battery life. On this 13, 12 hours. I haven't had it long enough to really give you an accurate reading, but I have to say I've used only a quarter of the available power on here, and I've been using it quite heavily. Apple says 6.5 hours remaining, which is slightly less than 12 hours. I do think you're going to get that kind of a battery life. And all the other reviewers who've had it for a little bit longer are claiming excellent battery life, more than 12 hours in some cases in normal use. So that's pretty impressive. It also has a much faster SSD. I was very surprised to find out when I benchmarked it that it was the fastest SSD I'd ever used, except for one on my Mac Pro using the PCI Express bus. And there's a reason for that. Apple has moved their solid-state drive off of the SATA bus, and on the new MacBook Airs, they're on the PCI Express bus, and that makes a very, very big difference. We're talking 600 megabytes a second read and write on this thing. Very fast. They offer it in a stock configuration of 128-gig hard drive, 8 gigabytes of RAM. That's an SSD hard drive at a starting price of $1,099. These are a little less expensive, actually, than the MacBook Airs of previous years. And there's one thing that you might wonder about. The processor speed is a little bit slower. This is a maxed out MacBook Air. So I put an i7 in it running at only 1.7 gigahertz, although it will step up to faster speeds. Slightly slower processor speeds on here, giving you slightly slower benchmark results. But I have to tell you, you won't notice the difference. And one of the benefits, of course, because it's using Haswell, is much, much better battery life. And I think that this is plenty fast enough. However, the slower processor speed and the desire for increased battery life do mean that we're not going to get the best screen resolution possible. This is, not a Retina display. It's 1440 by 900, which is nowadays, I think, a little low for a 13-inch notebook. Apple has really defined this category. The MacBook Air was the first
Ultrabook before Intel even thought of the phrase Ultrabook, and all the other Ultrabooks really are copying the MacBook Air. It is still a gorgeous design, thin, light, very portable. And, of course, the unibody aluminum means it feels robust in the hand. It doesn't torque or twist. This is, you know, the Cadillac, the class act of thin and light notebooks, and remains so, easily the best trackpad on the market. And that's another thing that's missing here is there's no touch screen, as you'd find on many of these Windows 8 laptops, but Apple's done such a good job with the trackpad and the trackpad gestures that many folks say, I don't mind because I'm getting the kind of touch-responsive experience just using the trackpad alone. I'm not sure I agree with that. I'd love to see a Retina display on this. I'd love to see a touch screen. It is a lower resolution than, for instance, the comparably priced Acer S7, which has a 1080p display. And I notice it. You know, I use so many Retina devices now that I really can see the difference in terms of the screen resolution. It's not exactly horrible, but it's just not as crisp as I'd like it. So let me, but I have to tell you, amazing battery life, amazing throughput on the SSD drives. The reboot is just seconds. It feels perfectly responsive. And of course, you wouldn't maybe with a Retina display be able to push these pixels around as fast as I am. It's just these are important distinctions to know about. The price starts at $1099. As configured here, this is about $1,450 because I did get the top of the line, put an i7 in it, put 8 gigs of RAM in it. So you can build to order and get it to be a lot more expensive. Pros on this, incredible battery life, best trackpad in the market, best form factor. This is the standard setter in this market. There's just nothing better out there. And the SSD drives are the fastest I've seen on anything. This thing, it does not slow down when you're accessing the hard drive. Cons, well, it's pricier than some PCs. The CPU is slightly slower, which some might take offense at. And I am a little disappointed by the lack of a Retina display. It's not that I don't understand why. It's kind of that's how you get the battery life and the speed. But 1440 by 900 is kind of a low resolution these days. However, no question in my mind, this is an absolute buy. Apple has taken what is probably the best product in this category and made it just a little bit better. I expect to see even more improvement in battery life when the next generation of OS X Mavericks comes out with some features tuned specifically for the Haswell chipset in here. So you're going to see more, believe it or not, more than 12, 13, 14 hours of battery life on something like this. This is the ideal, as Nilay Patel said, the ideal notebook for taking to the coffee shop and staying all day. A definite buy for the 2013 MacBook Air. I love it.
All right. I don't know whose idea this was. Whose idea was this, Shannon?
This was originally Tony's idea, and Tony said, a couple months
ago. Can we get the Zero DS motorcycle? And you are a nice person. You got it for him.
Yep.
This is a $14,000 electric motorcycle. Can reach up to 126 miles on a single charge. The torque curve, as I know Russell and you know, the torque curve on an electric motor is flat. It's as much torque at zero as it is at 126. Yeah. That means, well, let's just watch.
All right, so this is the 2013 Zero DS model. It's a fully electric bike.
DS stands for dual sport, so you can do some off-road riding with this bike.
So right off the bat, the big thing about this bike, in size and about the bike, is the battery. It's an 11.4 kilowatt battery that is the biggest that Zero offers, with an estimated range of 120 in the city and
76 on the freeway,
which Tony tested out himself.
More on that later.
We'll talk about that later. Okay. So when you first look at the Brembo, it definitely feels like a premium motorcycle. Nothing really looks cheap. You've got stainless steel braided brake lines, really nice rims, and it's a belt-driven single drive, and the fit and finish on everything is really nice. And that does come with a price tag of $15,999. So the battery is 11.4 kilowatts of power. You're paying about $1,000 for every kilowatt of a battery, so it's about $11,000 a battery. attached to about $4,000, $5,000 bike.
The bike is made locally here in Santa Cruz, so that's pretty nice if you want to buy American.
So the battery from dead to full takes about 7.5 hours to charge. Its output is 56 horsepower and 68 foot-pounds of torque, so it definitely takes off pretty quick. Looking at the bike, you can tell there's something missing, right, Tony?
Yeah, so the bike is, I guess, one gear. There's no gear, so there's no clutch, and there's no transmission. So it's like riding an automatic motorcycle.
Yeah, if it weren't for the $16,000 price tag, I would say this is a great beginner's bike, because all you have to focus on is the brakes and gas. So I really liked the dash on this motorcycle. It's really clean, kind of tiny, but you can easily read it at a glance. Oh, and also, where your gas tank would be, is actually like a little lunchbox guy dudette. You can just pull him out, you got a little handle, and go have a picnic. So when riding the bike around, you have the option of either putting it in sport mode or eco mode. Now, sport mode is a set mode that allows you to have 100% power, top speed, and somewhere around 100% torque. But what you can also do is go into eco mode to either save power or connect to the bike with Bluetooth. You'd go to the app store, iPhone or Android, download the Zero Motorcycles app, sync it to the bike, and then you can change the profile. And what I preferred to do, I would set the torque all to 100%, top speed, everything to the top, and then you can also set the engine braking so that the battery regenerates. And the feel to that while the bike was slowing down was probably more comparable to a typical motorcycle slowing down, and it felt like a motorcycle should. And if you turn that all the way down, it just coasts, which is kind of weird for me, slowing down.
Yeah. So, Brian, how was your few days with this bike? I know you rode it everywhere you went. You did the in-and-out test.
I did the in-and-out test. I was able to get to in-and-out and back without, you know, losing battery. But just the whole riding experience, I really enjoyed. The weirdest thing for me was coming up to an intersection and completely silent.
Yeah. I mean, I was at the light with a guy next to me in the car, and he was like, "What are you riding?" And
right.
I was like,
"It's an electric bike." You can hear him perfectly.
Yeah, no, I can hear perfectly. Yeah. And so I told him it's an electric bike, and he's like, "Oh, so it's like a Prius for motorcycle." I was like,
"Kinda,
basically."
And it's not that it's completely silent, because when you're moving, it sounds pretty cool.
So you took it off road. It's a dual sport.
So yeah, one of the added benefits of having a dual sport is it's not, you know, the sportiest bike on the road, but and it's not like the greatest dirt bike either, but you can do both. And it was fun. It was fun to take it off road. The nice thing about not having a clutch when you're riding in dirt is you don't have to worry about stalling the bike. Yeah, so two things. Leaving an intersection, you just twist the throttle and you take off, and it goes quick. Like, I would say up to like 50 miles per hour, 0 to 50 is faster than my street bike that I have, my 600cc.
It's faster than mine as well.
But on the dirt, what that translates into is you don't get stuck when you hit sand, which happened to me. And, you know, you can just really be easy on the throttle and just kind of dial it in so you feel the back end spinning. There's no engine noise to kind of distract you or anything. You just, you're one with the bike when you're out there on the dirt and stuff.
Damn.
Also, there's single rotor front and rear brakes with steel braid lines, and they worked really good. Like, stopping this motorcycle was not a problem. It's got a fully adjustable suspension, too. So it did a really great job. I wouldn't use it for jumping, but it handled, you know, a few bumps and stuff, no problem.
Wait, how much does the bike weigh?
So that's another cool thing. The bike only weighs 400 pounds, and it feels, I mean, when I was riding, it felt really light. Like, all the weight is in the bottom of the bike, and the high bars and the seating position made this super easy to ride around, and it was nice being able to hop the curb at the Twit studio, go up the curb, and then go into the studio and just plug in. So for the few days that I was able to ride this bike, my commute is about 20 miles from my house to Twit. And then I would plug in the bike, and then I would also do some back road riding and go home, which was about another 60 miles, and that was perfect for my commute. I never had any battery anxiety.
I also tried commuting with this bike, and with my current commute, about 45 miles, no problem whatsoever. It's all freeway. It's all uphill, downhill, high wind, over a bridge. Everything's fine, except when I pushed the bike a little bit further, I reached about 55 miles before the reserve charge came on, and it was warning me, so that's when I got off the freeway.
Right.
So it does do their estimated 76 miles if you run the battery drain. Yeah, and battery drain, I think mostly was happening at higher speed. So when I dial things down to 55, everything was fine. Yeah.
So what would you say were your pros for the bike?
I love the pickup. You know, the motor is obviously very efficient and a lot of torque. Torque is so important when you're riding.
One of my pros would be maintenance. So the initial cost of this bike is pretty steep, but the battery is said to last 300,000 miles of charging, and the only things you really will ever have to change is brake fluid, tires, maybe adjust the belt occasionally. Other than the initial cost, maintenance is pretty low for a motorcycle. And another pro for me would be it's a cool looking motorcycle. Like, I definitely got a lot of compliments riding around, and people kind of want to know why this bike doesn't make any noise as you're going by.
So what are the things that you didn't really like about the bike?
The bike itself, pretty much nothing. This is a super fun bike to ride, but the two biggest cons are pretty obvious, and that would be price at $15,999 is pretty steep. But I think where this would fit in is it's a good second or third bike. And then the second con, which would probably fit for you more, was range.
The range, I mean, it's because there's no transmission, you're sort of stuck with that one gear. And so the faster you go, the less efficient the motor is. So it's not the greatest bike for all highway commute like I do. But for what you do, where it's sort of mixed.
It's kind of 50-50 for me. So buy, try, or don't buy for the Zero DS. I'm definite buy. It's the most fun I've had riding a motorcycle in a long time with no clutch. Just turn the throttle and go. So buy. You, Tony?
Well, for me, it's pretty obvious that I do need more range in my commute. So for me, it's going to be a try. Definitely plan out your route going to work. If this works for your route, it's definitely a buy.
So that's been our review of the all-electric motorcycle. Back to the studio.
Point out a couple of things. First of all, Brian and Tony are experienced riders. This is not for your first, you know, learning how to ride a motorcycle bike. It's your second or third bike, they said. In their dreams, it's very, at $15,000 as equipped, that's with the extra battery, that's a lot. Hey, a special thanks to Anthony Nielsen, who did some of the shooting and did all the editing on that and really made that a lot of fun. I felt like I was watching Battlestar Galactica there, Anthony. And of course, to Tony and Brian, who did the riding. Brian did a lot of the shooting as well.
All right, so my review is next. I'm hopefully going to steal this product and take it home with me because I love this thing, but not to give it away what the verdict is. But this is the new Acer S7. I believe it's the 69 or 391 or something like that. I believe the product model number is. Anyway, this is the new Acer S7 2013 model, which is their upgrade from last year's model, obviously. And it also includes a new Haswell processor. So the inside specs of this guy, the one I got is the i5 model. It also has a 128 gig solid state drive. It's a RAID 0 drive, very, very fast. Great for, you know, everything that you need to get into. And excellent Wi-Fi power. It also includes a webcam on the front. Not a bad webcam at all. I didn't use it that much, but it's great for Skyping and whatnot. And the resolution on this is full HD. It's 1920 by 1280. Very responsive touchscreens, too. So as opposed to yours, Radford, mine does have a touchscreen, and it's a 13-inch model. So the one that I received, this one is actually $1,399 on the market, so it's almost $1,400. They do have an i7 version. That one is almost $1,700, although you could probably get it cheaper if you go on Amazon or something like that. But on the Acer website, it's $1,700 for the top line one. The top of the line version also has a 256 gig solid state drive as well, which is very, very nice. I really like this machine, if I haven't told you that already.
Yeah.
So as far as the exterior of this guy goes, it does include the nice white Gorilla Glass on the outside. It still tilts all the way back. And it doesn't flex, too. It doesn't flex a whole lot, but you can still tilt it back and be able to lay it down and share the touchscreen with somebody if you needed to. I haven't needed to do that at all, but I did find it's really nice if I ever need to sit this down on my lap. And, for example, if I'm slouching over or something, it's very nice to be able to bend it as far back as I need it to go.
That's really nice.
It is IPS screen, so no matter which way that you tilt it, you can see it very well. Ta-da!
How does the hinges feel? Is it pretty solid?
The hinges are really sturdy, so I did read up on it a little bit. They used this crazy scientific information to be able to build this mechanism in it. So it doesn't bend. You aren't going to feel that it's flexing a whole lot when you're touching it. If I sit it down on a solid surface, it's not going to bend all over the place and shake. And it's not even going to tilt over because it's pretty evenly weighted on both sides, both on the keyboard side and on the screen side, which is really nice. And I also found that I really like the keyboard and the trackpad on this. So the keyboard, they changed it a little bit from the old version. On this one, it gives you a little bit more spacing. So whenever you're, you know, hitting everything down on there, whenever you're trying to type things in, you get a little bit more feedback. They moved it from, I think, 1 millimeter to 1.3 millimeters of feedback. So you get plenty of bounce back whenever you're typing on it. And it's also spaced out pretty well, so I don't find myself hitting the wrong keys all the time. Of course, I do have smaller hands, so got to keep that in mind. And it is backlit, so I don't have any problems with that. It's auto backlit, which there was one time when I was sitting in my living room and I had a problem with it actually registering to cut on the auto backlighting technology in it, but otherwise it was not a big issue. So, okay, there we go. So you can barely see it. You can see it with the Windows button down at the bottom, but it does backlight, and I can also have the power to not only backlight it up as high as I need it to go, I can also lower it so that it completely blacks out.
Okay, so you can adjust the brightness in this?
Yeah, I can adjust the brightness, and that's a really useful option in here. The screen isn't too blurry. It's not going to glare at all whenever I'm, well, unless I'm sitting outside, which I did like once. And of course, you're going to have that problem in the sunlight. But otherwise, it's a fine screen. It's one of my favorite screens as far as laptops go on the market right now. And the weight of this, how much do you think it weighs?
Oh, God. I want to say half a pound.
Half a pound? Yeah. Okay, here, hold it. It's a little bit more than half a pound.
Wow. You know, I've been interested in looking at this thing. This thing is really...
Yeah. It's about 2.8 pounds, I believe.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's just the fact,
so it weighs just a little bit more.
It's very... I mean, it just gives you that perception that it's very light.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yes, exactly. It does. It's very light. It's very skinny. When I close it all the way, it's tiny. It's less than an inch thick. So no problems there. The ports on this included, there's a couple of USB 3.0s. There's an SD slot. There is an HDMI and a display port. I believe it's Thunderbolt on here, but correct me if I'm wrong. It might be Thunderbolt. There's also, of course, the regular one for your headset right there. Now, the battery on this is something that I was really, really amazed at. So the older one, the older version, got, I believe, less than 5 hours. It was not that great, especially for the market these days. This one, though, includes a battery power of a good 8 hours.
That's nuts.
It's nice.
That's
a workday. Of course, it's not as good as a MacBook Air 2013 version, but this version for a Windows 8 laptop, it's pretty smooth. It's going to last you a nice long time. No problems there. Also, I should mention the trackpad on this. The model that I received had an old driver for the trackpad. I have a problem with things in Windows 8 where it's like inversed. I hate inverse scrolling. It drives me nuts. So I had to download a brand new driver on here. There was no easy way to get to that on this Acer laptop, so I had to go to their website and download a new driver. I don't think that's necessarily an Acer fault. I think it's just a Windows 8 issue. So any issues that I had software related, they were all things that I can customize in Windows 8 anyway. So once I got it updated, though, I was able to use the trackpad with no problems. It's nice and fluid, very easy to use, and I can use all those multi-touch gestures. I can use the forefinger touch somewhere. The scroll. Oh, there we go.
Awesome.
So I can use all the different multi-gestures on there. Really easy to use. Now, other than the CPU in here, it also has a Intel HD 4400 graphics. It's got 8 gigs of RAM. Really nice. The 1080 IPS screen, of course. The battery is amazing. The solid-state storage with the RAID 0 setup. And then the webcam on the top. It also has a couple of speakers on the bottom. right here. These are Dolby speakers. Hmm. I noticed whenever I'm sitting this on my lap and just typing away, the speakers don't sound that loud. They're very, very quiet. But when I do open it up and I put it on a solid surface like my desk, it gets a lot louder because you're getting that flat surface to make the sound go up and out instead of just straight down.
Yeah.
So that's something noticeable. Also, the fans are a lot quieter in this new model than last year's model, and they switched around the power button. So it's on the side instead of up here on the front.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, so you're not going to accidentally press it or something like that, which was a big problem with last year's model. Now, let's go ahead and get into my pros and cons. So my pros with this, it's great battery life. I love that it's 8 hours of battery life. It's very lightweight at under 3 pounds, and it's got this excellent display. I absolutely love the display on this thing. I totally want to steal
it. What kind of display was it?
It's IPS 1080p.
Okay.
Yeah, full HD, so very, very pretty. And not bad for a 13-inch machine either, so it's pretty good.
It makes it look more sharper with a smaller screen, right?
Yeah. So. Now, they do sell a version of this outside the U.S., and it has a much better resolution on it, surprisingly. It's like, I don't remember the exact specs on it, but it is a higher resolution outside of the U.S. And my cons... the power brick on this thing is huge. I didn't bring it out here with me, but it's this big white thing that you have to plug in straight into your power supply. And unfortunately, it's not like a small one like this one, where it's just one teeny tiny cord with a 3-prong little connector at the end.
So does it hang
it's a
on
huge
the,
brick.
Does it actually hang on the outlet?
Yeah.
You know, it does.
It like hangs
the
on the outlet.
Hangs on the outlet.
Yeah.
It's not
and it's
separate
kind of
where...
heavy. It adds like a pound. It's terrible.
So how's that possible? Like if there's going to be a brick.
And I know. Yeah,
I mean,
you
like,
basically
oh,
have to
here.
Move all
well,
your plugs around to be able to plug it in. So it's kind of annoying, but, you know, it's not a horrendous issue with it. And then the other con that I had was the quieter speakers. They aren't that loud, but that's something that you're going to have to cope with an Ultrabook. Unfortunately, with this one, you do have to cope with that. So if I would give this a buy, try, or a don't buy, I would have to say buy. Duh. It's one of my favorite laptops on the market, or Ultrabooks. I absolutely love the thing. I think that the specs are really, really nice. And personally, I will probably buy my own if I don't get to keep this one, which I probably don't get to because I always have to ship the cool stuff back.
How much RAM was on that thing?
8 gigs.
8 gigabytes.
Yeah, 8 gigabytes of RAM.
On that form factor, that's nuts.
It's not bad. No wonder it's so fast. It's so pretty.
Yeah.
It's my baby.
At that form factor and at that weight,
I bite hardware.
Completely like missed off the mark on.
I love this thing. Next up, we have Mr. Tom Merritt. He's going to give us a review of the Logitech Harmony Ultimate. He's pretty much one of our home theater geeks here, so let's see what he thinks.
So this is the Logitech Harmony Ultimate, list for $350. It's a universal remote. You probably find it for about $300 these days. And it's in the long line of Harmony remotes that promise to be easy to set up and then flawlessly control all of the things in your media center. I've had a Logitech Harmony 800 for years, and I've been ready to replace it because the buttons are starting to wear out. One of the cool things about the Logitech Harmony Ultimate is that it is RF, Bluetooth, and infrared. So we'll get to that in a second. I want to talk about the setup, though. Big deal with Harmonies is you go online, you tell the app what devices you have, and then you can create profiles for those devices, and you can create what are called activities. So if you press watch TV, the remote will automatically turn on the television and the satellite box or the cable box or the DVR, whatever else it needs to do that. If you want to say, I want to watch Roku, it'll switch to the Roku input, and it'll transfer your remote to be able to control the Roku box, whatever. The online system of setup has never been good from Harmony, and I would argue it may have gotten worse. It's a long install process because you have to do a plug-in from Logitech and they use Silverlight, which gave me no end of heck trying to get started on this thing. And it's just slow and buggy and confusing. And for some reason, HDMI 4, which was working fine on my old Logitech Harmony remote, was no longer an option. And I had to reprogram a new thing. So absolutely hate the setup app. The setup of the Logitech Harmony Ultimate is a little more complicated than the usual one because you have this little Logitech Harmony hub. So you have to plug this in, set it up with your Wi-Fi network. You will need a Wi-Fi network to make this work. And then you have to put infrared repeaters around to broadcast the infrared. Now, I was a little skeptical about this because I've tried one of these kinds of systems before and I didn't like it. However, wasn't that bad to set up, and it actually worked. A lot of these infrared repeaters are a little sketchy. This one works really well. Also, you get a much better charger. The old one that I had was flat, and it would always beep because it would get warped and it wouldn't work. This one sits right in there really nicely. So it's a much better charging system. But the best part about this Logitech Harmony remote is that you don't have to point it at the television. Because it used to be you'd have to hold that remote and wait for it to turn on the television, now turn on the VCR, now change the input, and you couldn't hold it down until the infrared was done sending all the commands. This one, because this is connected to the Wi-Fi, just sends the command over there, and then it takes care of everything else for you. You don't have to deal with it. You can actually use an app on your phone as long as you're connected to the same Wi-Fi network as your Harmony Ultimate hub. So that, in addition to a much better keyboard layout, and they've improved the keyboard layouts over the years, but these all make sense. These buttons have the common terms like okay and guide and DVR. And then the buttons that are specific to your particular device will show up in this touchscreen. Also, what shows up in this touchscreen, my favorite thing ever, these short keys for different channels. So I can program in my favorite channels. Instead of having to know what channel sci-fi is on, I just scroll to the sci-fi icon and press it, and I can switch channels so much faster. Overall, Logitech Harmony Ultimate is an absolute buy. And I say that without reservation or changing my review that the setup is making me stutter. It's so bad. I'm hoping that Harmony will make that better. I'm hoping they'll get rid of Silverlight. I'm hoping they'll work on that user interface. But even with it, you can make it work. You can make it work correctly. And once you do, this is a dream for controlling all of your home theater setups. You don't even have to get up. The remote is across the room. You can just pick up your phone if it's next to you and use the remote. This is probably the best universal remote I've ever used. It's the Logitech Harmony Ultimate. Like I said, list for $350, available usually these days around $300. I say buy.
Okay, so we gave a buy to the Ultimate Universal Telephone. Well, I'm just kidding. It's the Universal Remote. But seriously, when Padre saw this, or was it you, Justin?
It was somebody me.
Said, what are said, we reviewing a phone today?
Phone for?
A home phone? That makes no sense.
What is this, Roseanne?
Hope you're enjoying Before You Buy, our show this year brought to you by our good friends at Hulu Plus. We love Hulu Plus. And in fact, if you love TV, you'll love Hulu Plus. It is a fabulous place to go to get to the latest TV shows, catch up on your hit shows, to watch movies in your living room or on the go. My Hulu Plus now is on my Chromecast, which means every one of my TVs has Hulu Plus. It's on Apple TV. It's on iPads, iPhones, Android devices. You'll be watching shows like Jimmy Kimmel Live or Shark Tank, Family Guy, Saturday Night Live, Doctor Who, entire seasons, every episode of Lost, every episode of Star Trek, even the original. You can also check out exclusive content, Hulu originals like The Wrong Man's and Behind the Mask, which is their new docuseries that takes you inside the world of sport mascots. Wherever you are, having Hulu Plus really is a great way to turn your iPad or your device into a portable television. You also get access, and this is just the right time of year for it, for a huge collection of ad-free movies and kids' content. The kids will love Hulu Plus. $7.99 a month. And if you use our special offer, you've got it through the end of the year. 2 weeks of Hulu Plus free. You've got to go to HuluPlus.com/BeforeYouBuy. All one word. HuluPlus.com/BeforeYouBuy. And start enjoying the best in television at HuluPlus.com. Now back to the best of Before You Buy, some of our best and funnest reviews of 2013, like this one. Jason Howell is here.
Hello.
Of TNT fame and all about Android. You scared me off last year. The Galaxy Note. It's a 10-inch tablet. I was very intrigued. It has a stylus.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about the Note phone. This is the Galaxy
tablet. Yeah.
And you said you didn't like the screen that much. So we got the new edition, the 2014 edition, the Galaxy Note 10.1.
Yep.
Here it is, ladies and gentlemen. Is it much different from last year's?
I would definitely say so. So, yes, first of all, if you go to my YouTube review.
You were scathing.
A lot of people did not like my review because I gave it a don't buy.
But that was chiefly the screen.
That was the big problem that I had. If you're paying $5 to $550 for a 10-inch tablet, it's premium tablets, premium territory as far as Android tablets are concerned. The resolution was 1280 by 800. The reason for that, they said, was because of the Wacom technology. It just wasn't working with the higher resolution displays. Well, they've cracked that nut. This is actually twice the resolution, 2560 by 1600 resolution.
Now you're talking.
I got to say, the display on this is gorgeous. It's vibrant. They really solved that main complaint that I had.
Yay.
And it's just a solid, sharp-looking display.
I see they've adapted some of the Note 3 styling. You've got the pleather, stitched pleather back.
Yeah. So, okay. So I actually like
the
design of this.
Grip.
More or less. Yeah. It's totally fake leather. Yeah. I mean, it's not even pleather because it's not cushiony. It's kind of like plastic that's been made to look like leather for the most part. You know, even right down to the stitching on the side, which is kind of cheesy.
See, on the note, it's real stitching.
It's not. It's a total plastic overlay.
Right.
But it has a nice grip to it. And, you know, from afar, if you're, you know, in the business world and you want a tablet that looks a little bit more professional, I guess, if that's important to you, people are going to look at it and they're probably going to be tricked enough, you know, from afar, if that's important to you. But overall, the design, I actually kind of like the design. I think the way that they, you know, kind of have the glassy white with the chrome around the side kind of gives it a nice, more premium kind of look and feel. They changed it this time around to put the S Pen up at the top, which I actually liked a lot more than down in the bottom. I felt down in the bottom, you kind of had to go out of your way to get it. Here, you're already holding it in landscape anyways. It's just right there. You just pull it. And quite frankly, having that S Pen with kind of some of the advanced functionality that has down here, it has this little Air command window, which I believe is part of the Note 3 as well.
Yeah, the Note 2. This was part of. Or, I'm sorry, not the Note 2. The Note 3. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
And you know, really cool. Like right off the top, when you remove the pen, it opens up that window, and then you can get right to making your notes and everything. You can also pull that up on the S Pen. There's a little button on the side here. If I hover, you can see a little. I don't know if you can see that in the video, but you can see really a little indicator that says where I'm hovering over. Uh-huh. I press that button, and it'll pop up the Air command. So it's just some cool features, like, you know, hey, I want to, you know, capture this desktop, so I draw that, and that becomes kind of something saved in my scrapbook for later. I can write over the top of it. Little nifty features like that.
Samsung's really promoted this notion that they do Android Plus. In fact, at their developer conference, they really wanted to talk about their SDKs, their overlay, TouchWiz. They didn't even mention Android, even though it's on an Android platform. This is a Samsung device.
Absolutely. And it's pretty loaded as far as the specs are concerned. 1.9 gigahertz octa-core Exynos processor. This is the Wi-Fi version, 32 gig Wi-Fi version for $549.99.
A caution on Exynos that I've learned from my Galaxy S4. Because it's a Samsung processor, it hasn't made it into the open source community. So these will not be readily rootable or modifiable.
They're a little bit more difficult.
Hard to remove TouchWiz on an Exynos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you got to be okay with TouchWiz. I mean, when you're in the Samsung world, as far as this is concerned, if it's not a Google Play edition, which this definitely isn't, you got to be okay with TouchWiz.
That's why you buy a product like this, because of the stylus, because of the additional features, right?
Yes, it's kind of a catch-22, right? Yeah. Like, you might not like overlay, but then again, they're not going to add in this functionality that isn't inherently built into the core of Android.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, they're going to build around it. In the past, I haven't really cared much for TouchWiz. It didn't bother me as much this time around. And, you know, they've definitely made a lot of refinements here and a lot of advanced, you know, kind of S Pen, as you say, S Pen functionality to kind of go into it. You've also got your multi-window support. So you have a menu over here on the side. So I could pull up Evernote on one side and then I could pull up, you know, YouTube on the other.
They promote this heavily in their advertising. I never used it. Do you find it useful?
It's neat. I didn't find it directly useful. It seems like the kind of thing that might get useful over time. You know, in the last week that I've been playing around with the tablet, didn't use it so much other than
to
test it out.
They show people sending text messages and dragging images from a gallery into the text message.
Yeah. You really got to buy into Samsung's kind of thought process when you get a device like this. But you know, as far as the specs are concerned, pretty, you know, octa-core processor, so that sounds great. 3 gigs of RAM. I will say that TouchWiz, one of my main complaints is just that it kind of has a certain lag that is hard to showcase right off. You almost have to, like, get in there and touch it and move it and operate it for a while. and you start to kind of just feel like TouchWiz slows things down.
See that lag.
There we go.
Yeah.
You know, that was like two seconds
visible.
Of a switch.
Yeah.
So little things like that that kind of are a little bit of a downside. But for the most part, you know, they address my complaints. The display is excellent. The camera is still a camera. It's a camera on a tablet. I have a hard time rating those because I never use a tablet for the camera. So
people do.
But, you know, as long as it's serviceable, which it definitely is serviceable.
How many megapixels?
8 megapixel on the rear and then 2 megapixel on the front. So pretty standard as far as that's concerned these days. Battery life was pretty okay. It's an 8220 milliamp hour lithium ion battery. They claim up to 9 hours. And, you know, I certainly didn't find myself in a situation where I was hurting battery life.
If you use the Note 3, this just looks like a big boy version of the Note 3.
That's exactly what it is. It's all about the S Pen.
That's smart, though, because it's, you know, people presumably have used that. And so now they want something bigger. This is a logical place to go.
Yep, absolutely. Gaming was great on it. Overall, I was really happy with this.
So the lag is not a lack of processor speed.
Yeah.
Gaming is fine.
Yeah.
It's just something
I
else
thought
going
that, I found gaming, yeah. and I was
all
playing
the pixels. I don't know.
Yeah, I was playing Riptide GP2, which has a lot of moving parts. It's a really great way to test kind of graphics performance on Android. Dead Trigger 2, and I thought they played really smoothly, and this was a lot of fun to game on. So it's just it comes down to that TouchWiz overlay, which I just feel like it slows things
down.
You
love it or you hate it.
Yeah, exactly. As far as the pros, the display is magnificent. S Pen support is, I mean, you're not going to find this kind of integrated stylus, air quotes, support in many other tablets on Android right now. So the S Pen is part of that. And it has, I think, a pretty nice premium kind of stylistic approach this time around. Cons, performance lags and stutters in some places, typically TouchWiz. The camera, but, you know, what are you going to do? It's a tablet. And then it is pricey. $550 for the Wi-Fi model.
32
gigs of storage, yes, on this. So I recommend it as a buy if... Again, and I think I mentioned this last year, like if you want S Pen / advanced stylus support, it's kind of the game in town. It's probably the best as far as that category is concerned. If all you want is a nice premium tablet, I think you could probably look elsewhere because you don't need to spend that extra $50 to $150 for the S Pen if you're not going to use it that much. But I think for Wacom fans, they're going to love it.
The good news is they've addressed the issues you had with last year's
absolutely
screen.
They have.
And so it's high resolution. It looks great, which last year's did not.
Yeah.
There you go, the Galaxy Note 10.1. And did you say buy? Did you say try?
I say buy.
You say buy.
Yeah, particularly for Wacom fans or people interested in the S Pen. Yes, buy.
Jason Howell tonight, all about Android.
That's right.
There were some big Google Plus announcements today, so we'll be watching. That'll be interesting. And then
it's an interesting time of year for Android.
No Nexus 5.
Man.
Still waiting.
I want to believe. Come on.
I believe.
Give me my next phone, Google.
I'm dressing as a Nexus 5 for Halloween.
Ooh, that's a good idea.
I'll be invisible.
Time to talk about something that has been hotly awaited. And actually, Google surprised us all by shipping early on Friday. It was Thursday, Halloween Day. Google put the Nexus 5 on sale, their successor to the very popular Nexus 4. This is a line of phones starting with the Nexus 1, which was, in my opinion, one of the best Android phones I ever had. I loved my Nexus 1. They're made by Google, or made for Google by companies, in this case, LG for the Nexus 4 and 5. But Google doesn't allow any junk from the manufacturer, and because they're sold at the Google Play Store, there's no carrier cruft on it either. It is a pure Google experience. Now, the original Nexus 1 was designed to bypass the carriers. Google learned their lesson. They realized they do need the carriers. So the newest Nexus, the Nexus 5, is available on everybody but Verizon. You can buy it from Sprint. You can buy it from T-Mobile and AT&T. I bought this from the Play Store. Here's the amazing thing on the Nexus 5. The price. So this is a 32 gig Nexus 5. They also sell 16 gigs. Unlocked, unsubsidized 16 gig Nexus 5 is $350. For $400, you can get the 32 gig. Now, you do make some sacrifices. No SD card, just like the Nexus 4, and no removable battery. There's no serviceable parts inside. And that's unfortunate. That's one of the things I like about Android phones, but not this one. They've replaced the glass back. I have the old Nexus 4. This was kind of interestingly stylish. It had a glass back and front, which also made it very fragile, but kind of cool looking. I have to be honest. When I reviewed the Nexus 4, I gave it a do not buy because I thought the screen quality was low. It wasn't as good as many of the phones on the market, the top of the line Android phones. And I also, I confess, didn't fully appreciate the value of having a pure Google Experience phone. I have learned my lesson. And a year later, I have to say there's a lot of good in the Nexus 5. First of all, it's the first phone to have Android 4.4 KitKat. No other phones yet. Many will. KitKat has some interesting new features. This is the new Google Home screen. I've customized it a little bit, but this is the thing that's most important. One of the pages of the home screen is now Google Now. Google Now is sewn into all of this. Also, a new photo app. It's a little confusing, frankly. There's still the Gallery app, but they also now have a Photos app on the Nexus 5 that really is just an interface to the Google Plus Photos, including their new Auto Awesome, their new video editing. There's a lot of new photo features in Google Plus that I really like. I have to say, the quality of the camera is surprisingly good. Look at that picture of the sidewalk. That was a mistake, obviously. It's really rich. I think there's an HDR Plus mode that does a great job. This is an 8-megapixel shooter. Still maybe not as good as the iPhone, but I have to say, Google's really making some real progress in the software side of this, particularly if you're a Google Plus user. I think you're going to really enjoy the quality of the camera on this. That's a first for a Nexus phone, frankly. They've always been a little second rate in the cameras. It's also a much improved screen over the Nexus 4. It's now full 1080p, 5-inch screen. And I felt like it was a little washed out. I think my eyes are ruined by all of the Super AMOLED screens I've been looking at. It's the thing that really works well is if you have to use this in bright sunlight. I've never seen a phone work so well. It's about this bright in bright sunlight. It is as good in bright sunlight as it is in the dark. There's a lot to be said for that. Of course, you don't have to use the Google Launcher. Like every Android phone, you can use your favorite launcher. I'm just showing you the original Google Launcher just so you can see what it looks like. You know, it's an impressive phone, and boy, for $350, that you gotta say that's probably the best deal on an Android phone. When you buy Nexus, you're also buying the guarantee that Google will update these phones first. So when the next generation of Android comes out, it's certain that you will get it before anybody else does because it's a pure Google experience. Of course, you have full access to the Google Play Store. You'll get the latest version of the Play Store. It's a little bit changed. You'll get now the menu is over here on the left. You'll get that Photos app. It's a very impressive phone. A couple of us have already got our Nexus 5. Chad loves his. He said it's the best phone he's ever used. Yeah, it's an IPS LCD screen. Looks pretty good even at an angle. It feels a little bit low contrast, maybe a little washed out over bright to me. In fact, one of the reasons I have a black wallpaper on that is to reduce that feeling of kind of over bright. But maybe that's because I've been spoiled by other phones and other screens. Compared to the Moto X, now I gotta say, in my opinion, the Moto X is still the best Android phone out there. It's very close to a pure Google experience, but Motorola, a Google company, has added features that are still not on the Nexus 5. Things like the Motorola Assist, which know when you're in a meeting or on driving a car or asleep and automatically silence the phone so that you don't have to worry about getting woken up in the middle of the night. That'll automatically send out text messages if you want while you're in meetings. Those kinds of things are really nice features. The shake to open. But this does have one thing that the Moto X has. When the phone's unlocked, you can say, okay, Google, and the phone will respond. And
just did.
It just did. And I think that's really a nice feature. The hands-free, no button to push. The phone has to be unlocked for it to do that. This also lacks one feature that makes that really great on the Moto X, which is the skip feature. That means when you're in a trusted Bluetooth area or you put it on a specially formulated NFC chip, it'll automatically unlock itself. You still have to unlock this manually or not lock your phone, which I don't recommend. Another nice feature that I expect to be in more and more Motorola phones in time is the tap to pay. It's got NFC in the back. You can set it up with a variety of applications. Of course, Google hopes you'll use Google Wallet. It comes with Google Wallet. And if you go to a store that has the tap to pay feature, don't know where those would be, but one hopes more will appear, you can literally just tap this. I think McDonald's does it a few places like this. You can tap at your phone and automatically pay with your Google Wallet or other application. So a beautifully designed phone. I think Google was smart to replace the plastic with this velvety soft touch. They replaced the glass with the velvety soft touch plastic. Much improved camera software. The photosphere is bigger, better. The HDR Plus is excellent. When it ties into Google Plus and their camera capabilities, I think you get a pretty darn good phone. Great video, wonderful video capabilities. The screen, gorgeous. Thank you for 1080p. That's a very high resolution. Shannon played with it a little bit. She said she felt like it was a little soft focus. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. You've probably seen the same thing I am, which is just it feels a little washed out, maybe.
Yeah,
something
that must
like
be
that.
What it is.
Probably should play with it beforehand. So the pros, hey, the price is easily the number one pro. It is a great screen. It is a pure Google experience. You don't get purer than this, including the first phone to run Android 4.4 KitKat. On the con side, no removable battery, no SD card, either 16 or 32 gigs. That's all you get. And I do feel like the screen maybe lacks a little bit compared to the Super AMOLED screens from Samsung. Even the HTC One, which is also an LCD screen, I think looks better than this at a very similar screen resolution. Nevertheless, this is a definite buy. If you're a Nexus type, this is going to make you very, very happy. Probably the best phone Google's ever done. The Nexus 5, the first KitKat bar in a telephone. And that's my review of the Nexus 5. I liked it a lot. And I just think that there are other phones to look at, the HTC One, the Moto X. The good news is Android phone folks have huge, excellent choices nowadays. And this is just one more great phone. So, Mr. Razorblade, Robert Ballister, he's the host of This Week in Enterprise Tech, soon know-how, and soon to be a host of... I'm thinking programming 101. What do you think?
Yeah, that's what we want. We want to tell people it's a basic
show. Says what
show.
It is.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But we'll figure out the name. What do you got there?
Well, you know, I take a look at a lot of laptops that do many things well. But I thought maybe this time I'd take a look at a laptop that does just one thing incredibly well. So this is a Razer Blade 14-inch. This is their 2013 model. And it's just...
Look how
for
thin
gaming.
That is.
It's super, super thin.
So it's an ultrabook for gaming.
For gaming. Crazy powerful gaming.
Stealth fighter-inspired composite fiber panels. Gucci-designed palm rest. 30-megapixel web camera. Ultra-thin Blu-ray optical drive. Porsche-branded display. Smart material-coated keyboard keys. Liquid metal casing. Titanium hinges. Gold-coated USB multifunction ports. All part of this futuristic laptop from Razer. Wait, what is this, a designer espresso maker? Heck no. This is the 2013 Razer Blade 14-inch gaming laptop, and it doesn't have any of that junk. What it does have is a crazy amount of horsepower packed into an ultra-portable laptop designed for one thing and one thing alone. Gaming. The Blade is currently the world's thinnest and lightest gaming ultrabook. At 13.6 inches long, 9.3 inches deep, and 0.66 inches high, with 4.1 pounds of heft. All wrapped in a jet-black, industrial-design-inspired aluminum shell. Right above a large, responsive multi-touch trackpad is a recessed keyboard that has plenty of travel and a pleasingly firm feedback, accented by Razer's ghoulish green backlight. Straddling the keyboard are stereo speakers that provide plenty of power, even if they are a bit anemic on the low end. The display is a 14-inch HD Plus 1600x900 16x9 matte finish panel with an LED backlight. It's topped by a 1.3-megapixel web camera and an array microphone. Razer omitted a touchscreen, which is disappointing since the Blade ships with Windows 8.1, but not unexpected since touch isn't a feature required by the type of games the Blade was made for. Ports are sparse. The left side houses the power port, two USB 3.0 ports, and a combo headphone microphone jack. The right side adds a Kensington lock port, an HDMI output, and a third USB 3.0 port. Noticeably absent is the Ethernet port, which is more than a little annoying considering that this is designed to be a gaming notebook. Instead, onboard networking is provided by a killer wireless N 1202 chipset providing dual-band 2.4 and 5 GHz 802.11 ABGN, along with Bluetooth 4.01. Our review unit came equipped with a 256GB SSD, but the Blade can also come equipped with 128 or 512GB of ultra-fast storage. Of course, being a gaming notebook, the real specs are all about the power. And the processing punch comes from a quad-core Intel Haswell i7-4702HQ CPU, operating at 2.2 GHz with a 3.2 GHz turbo mode. The CPU is supported by 8GB of 1600 MHz DDR3L memory. The Blade uses NVIDIA's Optimus Tech,
That means that the laptop will use PowerSipping integrated class graphics processing when browsing or media watching, but then switch to a pixel-crunching NVIDIA GeForce GTX 765M with 2GB of dedicated GDDR5 memory when gaming. When paired with the quad-core Haswell CPU, this means that the Blade's integrated 70-watt-hour lithium-ion polymer battery was able to survive our rundown tests for 7 hours 2 minutes. Now, that number will go down if the GPU and CPU are taxed, but that's still a phenomenal runtime on a quad-core gaming laptop that simultaneously gives you a fantastic boost in horsepower. And believe me, that power boost shows. In 3DMark Vantage, the Razer Blade topped out at 16,955. That places it in the upper echelon of gaming notebooks, and it dominates gaming ultrabooks from Alienware, Main Gear, and even Razer's last generation of gaming notebooks, besting some of them by more than double. Test after test showed high frame rate gaming, even with the eye candy turned to 11. Battlefield, Call of Duty, Crysis, BioShock, all smooth and crystal clear. The one downside to all this processing power in a ridiculously small package is that the Blade tends to get hot, uncomfortably hot when pushed to the limit. But then again, after so much mind-boggling awesomeness, I probably couldn't feel my fingers anyways. While the lack of non-gaming accoutrements may sour the Blade for some, it is undeniably the gaming ultrabook to have for the gamer on the go. The Razer Blade 14-inch gaming laptop is available now. You can find it online for under $2,000.
So, you like it?
I do.
I get the feeling you like it.
I mean, it's crazy powerful. If you want a powerful notebook to do gaming, there really is nothing quite like this. I mean, it's light. It's powerful. Did I mention it's powerful? Yeah. Also, it's incredibly powerful.
I just don't expect much power in a machine that thin and light. It just seems like you're going to sacrifice something to get the size down.
Right. And so
we're so used to desktop equivalents, right?
And what really enabled this is Haswell. So the Haswell quad-core i7 has gotten power down there so that the battery will last you 6 to 7 hours. You know, of course, that goes down as you draw more and more power from the GPU and the CPU. But the trade-off is, although this is an incredible machine for gaming, it's not a great machine for anything else.
Because no touch.
No touch, no card slot, no ports beyond three USB and
it's
HDMI.
Gamers.
It is for gamers, and it's unapologetically for gamers.
I'm kind of surprised that they didn't include Ethernet, just because.
Yeah,
you know, but I got to point out the MacBook Air doesn't have any of those things either. And nobody says, "Well, boy, that must just be for gamers."
Well, but for gaming, though, I can attest that playing through Ethernet works a lot better.
It
does. Well, because it's all about the ping. If you're a professional gamer and you want this
That's
on the go,
point. I'm sure you can get a converter, though.
You can. Yeah. But it's, you know, to leave it out, I know people are going to nitpick on that.
And the graphics processor, is it Iris Pro?
It's a GTX 765.
Oh, it has NVIDIA.
Dedicated graphics part with 2GB of memory. It is wonderifically fast.
That's kind of what you expect from Razer.
Exactly. But hot. After about an hour of gaming on this thing, as I showed in my review, the keyboard where you touch gets over 100 degrees.
Yeah.
So
that's pretty hot.
Yeah, just be careful.
Don't play games in your lap.
Yeah. I would say, don't play. Yeah, please don't play.
Please,
in your lap.
Kids.
Let's be safe here. But if you're a gamer, and if you're a gamer who wants your gaming machine on the go, so not just your desktop, not just your big 11-pound desktop replacement, this is an absolute buy.
It might be your second computer.
It might be your second computer. $2,000, though, for anybody else?
That's a fair price.
Yeah.
Well, you think it's too much.
Yeah, for anybody else.
MacBook Air is $1,299.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
All right.
I'm going to show you what I got in this little bag here. You might have an idea from the shiny Apple on it. Now, as we record this, 11-12-13, November 12th, 2013, this morning at midnight Cupertino time, 3 a.m. East Coast time, Apple just took the store down and put the iPad mini with Retina display on the store. So at midnight Cupertino time, 3 a.m. East Coast time, Apple just closed the store, the online store, and said, we got the iPad mini with Retina. They had said not available till the end of November, and here it is. Now, I ordered it immediately when I woke up this morning, and it said, you'll get it maybe November 19th or 20th. I thought, oh, rats, I would really love to have it today a week earlier for before you buy. Well, by this afternoon, in the middle of Mac Break Weekly, I noticed that the Apple Store was allowing pickup. And this is what we're hearing. Somebody from Best Buy emailed me last night saying, I've got one in my hands. Apparently, Apple has told all of its retailers, as soon as you get them, you can sell them. And as soon as the Apple Store gets some in stock, then you can buy for in-store pickup. So we did. I was in the middle of Mac Break Weekly, but fortunately, Glenn Rubenstein and Josh Windisch were available to take this trip down. Now they get in the car. Chad, can we go right now and pick one up? Really? All right, Glenn's off to get our mini.
All right, they've wrested it away from Josh. And right. Here it is, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, hey. Wow, that was a mission, wasn't it? Well, you may wonder why Robert was sitting in the street with a chicken.
No reason.
It's Petaluma, yeah. Basically. That's why. He was waiting for Balut. Yep. No, what happened was we wanted to make sure that Glenn and Josh could get it in here in time. And so we were saving a parking space, right, for him. And that worked out well. Nobody ran you over.
It was in the sun. It was beautiful. It was
Thank
nice
you.
Out.
Yeah. Did you order a pizza?
I did. They would not deliver to a parking spot.
You're kidding.
No, that's strange.
They hung up on you?
They hung up on me.
What did you say?
I said, look for the guy in the red jacket holding a chicken. And they're like, yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah. They probably get a lot of calls they probably for the 140 do. It's Keller Street. Yeah. So here it is. And actually, but in addition to so the iPad mini is $399 for the basic 16 gig Wi-Fi. I ended up getting the 64 gig Wi-Fi model. No engraving or I wouldn't have gotten it today. I also decided, well, I'm going to get the smart case. I'm not a fan of the smart cover. It keeps it falling off, but the smart case actually goes all the way around the iPad mini. And this is the product red version. The negative on this one, and the do not buy really on this one, is it's very expensive, $60.
Ooh.
For it's leather. It's leather.
Well, leather or pleather?
No. It smells like dead cow. It's leather. No, they say it's actually leather. It's specially treated. But here it is. Should we open it up now? I'll be completely honest because we wanted to show this in action. Mm-hmm. I'd have opened this prior to the show, and I set it up so that we would have something to show. Otherwise, I'd have to go through the Apple setup. But let me just show you. This is an iPad Air, same exact styling as the iPad Air, but size-wise, of course, it's 7.9 inches instead of 9.7 inches. The screen is smaller. But in almost every respect, this is a duplicate of the iPad Air. Same A7 processor. Same external M7 processor watching the accelerometer and so forth. The screen resolution is even the same. In fact, when you get the screen resolution on a smaller screen, the dots per inch is higher on this. There is one difference. As this has come out, people have been benchmarking it with Geekbench, and it's been reported by Mac Rumors. Jason Snell's reported this also, that it is slightly slower clock speed. This is about 1.3 gigahertz instead of the 1.4 gigahertz in the iPad Air. Same speed, same processor, same speed as on the iPhone S. I don't think you're going to notice much difference. That's really not a huge difference from the point of view of a normal user. Let's unlock it, and I'll tell you what, Padre, I'm going to give you the honors of telling me what you think of the Retina display. This is the iPad Mini. I'm a fan of the Mini, by the way. I got to tell you, I loved the original Mini. With one exception, I said, why didn't they do a Retina display on the Mini? I mean, it just begs to have a Retina. So I was very gratified that Apple allowed us. No photos for you. Well, let me take a picture real quickly. it's downloading them from my photo stream, so there'll be a few pictures. In fact, is that the picture I took of Sarah Lane?
No.
I did.
She's not like that.
she's not happy now, I'll tell you. You know, I really wanted something that I could hold in one hand that would have that small form factor. It's, of course, lighter, not much lighter because the new Air is so much lighter, but still under the Air, under a pound. And I don't know, look at the screen, Robert. You tell me, what do you think of this display on this?
Man. I mean, look, the Retina display was the one thing that iPad Mini users have been wanting since it was released.
Yes.
And Apple is just a master of that. You know, they hold one feature back. People really want it. They build up anticipation, and then, boom, they release it. Mm-hmm. It does look good.
I mean, yeah.
Once you've seen Retina, it's hard going back.
I agree. And that's, you know, I've been using my Mini as my go-to iPad. It's the one I brought on vacation with me and everything. But I'm very happy that they have basically given the iPad Mini parity with the Big Brother in terms of roughly in terms of speed, certainly in terms of processor. It's a 64-bit processor. And in terms of screen, let's just launch Infinity Blade and just enjoy the Unreal Engine and Retina quality. And by the way, there is the there's the smart case, and you see it's smart. It's just put it to sleep, and now it's going to wake it up again. Let me unlock this here real quickly, and we can play Unreal. So this is just a first look. I'll tell you what, I'll play with it next week. I'll give you my full review. I can only say this: I've been waiting for you a long time, baby. Thanks for showing up. And we've crashed. There we go.
There's room for improvement.
That's always completely room normal. For improvement. Completely normal. The first time you run any big program. There you go. That's the iPad Mini, now available with Retina display. I almost can promise you these will be in very short supply before Christmas. A lot of people want them, but also I understand the Retina display is difficult to do. And so if you're lucky enough to have one at your Apple store, or you can order one online, I would do so quickly. I wouldn't delay. I imagine we'll see long waits soon for the Retina. Look at how this matches us.
It's stealth.
It's almost like I don't have an iPad Mini.
Now, I'm very interested in this next one because Patrick Delahanty is here, and he has a PlayStation 4. Yeah. Just came out.
Yep, got this on Friday. Gave it a thorough test. Did an unboxing.
Day one edition.
Yes.
Do you get a special sticker or logo or anything?
No, there's nothing special on it. But I'm loving it so far.
Awesome. Now, qualification. You're a PS3 user.
Yes.
You love PS3. Yeah. You were PS2 before that. Did you ever have an Xbox?
Never had an Xbox.
Okay, so we're not judging it against the Xbox. This is mostly judging against the PS3, I guess.
Yeah, and I think it's a vast improvement over the PS3. It doesn't have the games library yet, but it will get there at some point, I'm sure.
In fact, it's likely to get there faster than the PS3 because it's an x86 processor.
Exactly.
So it's a little easier to write software for.
Yeah, and there aren't many exclusive titles yet, but those will come, and even if they're not exclusive, they're still on PS3, and it's easy to write.
Give us a quick tour of the features. It still has a Blu-ray player, like its little brother.
Yeah, and it can play DVDs and Blu-ray. Can't play audio CDs.
Cannot play audio, okay. And no 3D yet.
They
said there will be an upgrade.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and I'm sure that there'll be many software upgrades. And hopefully, because the organization in the menus isn't really there, it's kind of all just...
So we're not seeing the traditional PlayStation 3 UI?
It's got this horizontal interface still. It's a little reversed where everything
instead
on
of
this
coming,
side
popping
was over
down,
there.
It pops sideways.
Yeah,
okay.
And there's stuff down below. So you've got all the games just in a straight line.
That's good, actually. It was always hard to get to a game on the PS3.
Well, I would like it if it was categorized somehow.
Because
if I want to get
games
to something that's way over here, I haven't played in a while.
Have you played Battlefield 4 on it?
Yeah.
Pretty good?
It looked great. Yeah.
So that's, I guess, really when you're reviewing this. And unlike the Xbox, this is not a multimedia device. It does have a Blu-ray. In fact, the PS3 was the best Blu-ray player on the market the whole time because they could easily upgrade it.
Yeah, and I played Blu-ray on this last night. Worked great. Played DVD. Worked great. Interface was simple.
HDMI only, right?
Yes.
No other way of connecting it to a TV.
Right.
And it is cheaper than the Xbox. $100 cheaper.
Yeah, $100. It doesn't come with the camera like the Xbox comes with the Kinect.
Or the Kinect.
But that's only $60.
And this would work with the Move controller if you had a Sony Move controller.
Yes.
Okay. So really, it's all coming down to what does it look like? How are the games?
Yeah.
By the way, I saw Netflix on there.
Yeah, it has Netflix.
Amazon Live.
Amazon. Redbox.
Okay.
Let me go down.
Quite a bit. All right.
Yeah, so it's got kind of a selection similar to the Apple TV here.
So it's a good media
device.
Not quite
as many, but I'm sure they'll add more. There's no MLB, but it's off-season. So at some point, they'll
NBA and NHL. That's nice. All right, let's see a game. You've got Need for Speed, the latest version of Need for Speed on here. That's your favorite game?
Yeah, I've got Need for Speed, Call of Duty Ghosts, and Battlefield 4. And so far, Need for Speed is the one I'm enjoying the most. But I love driving games.
Yeah, well, that would explain it. You drove here from Boston, didn't you?
Yeah, 3,000 miles.
Just can't get enough. Is it use your existing PlayStation account? You don't have to create a new account?
Yeah, but to do multiplayer, unlike the PS3, you have to buy PlayStation Plus.
Ah, so no, free lunch
no free
this
rides
time.
Anymore. All right, okay. It's going to be $50 a year.
All right. Still less than Microsoft.
Yeah, still less, but
That's good to know if you do multiplayer. So we're going to play a single-player version. You've got a Marussia B2?
I think your battery's dying fast.
Yeah, the battery.
Oh, nice timing. By the way, that's another thing that is big change on the PS4. The controller now is very different, and a lot of people think is better than, frankly, the not so great PS3 controller. What do you think?
Yeah, I like the feel of this a lot more than the PS3 controller.
These are the little handles are longer. It's easier to grasp, with a smaller hand.
Just the texture, it's different. I think it feels better.
It does feel good in the hand. Now, what is this? Oh, we're going to give them a different one here.
Yeah, we get the charged one here. It comes with one controller, but I did get a spare.
Okay.
This is a touch screen, or not a screen, but a touchpad in the middle, so that you, games can use this.
Have you used a game that uses it yet?
The only one I've seen has this is Battlefield 4, but that's just to access some options.
Okay. So this is yet to be really fully implemented.
Yeah, and it has speaker in here and a headphone jack, so you don't have to have wireless. You can actually just plug in. Right. Comes with a mono headphone that you can plug in.
Right. So there's no wireless audio, but there is a wireless controller which has audio.
Yes.
A hardwired audio.
There's a share button, so you can easily share gameplay footage on Twitch TV and screenshots or movies. So they're encouraging sharing of the footage and the gameplay.
I do notice they've changed to a micro USB charger, which is nice because everybody has lots of those probably. So you don't have to charge it off the PlayStation. You can charge it with anything, right?
Yeah, but the PlayStation will charge it now when it's off.
Hallelujah!
Drove me crazy on the PS3.
You had to leave it on to charge up your controllers.
And it comes with one cable to charge the controller. But my second controller didn't come with a USB cable.
Oh, that's crazy. Fortunately, these micro USB cables are a dime a dozen. So, all right, let's play a little bit of a game.
Yeah.
What did you think? The graphics look better than on your PlayStation 3?
Yes.
Noticeably.
Yeah, noticeably better. There's a lot more action. There seems to be less lag, less time at loading screens. Now, that could just be the games, but I think it's the system. Like the Xbox, it has 8 gigabytes of... this has GDDR, but the Xbox has DDR.
RAM.
Yeah.
And then how big is the drive? 500 gigs, right?
500 gigabytes. And unlike the Xbox, you can remove it and put in a larger one if you want.
Well, we noticed that. If people are interested, we did an iFixit teardown on Sunday. It's Twitch Special 173, I think. It was the first thing you do before you even open and void the warranty. You can slide off a little panel and get right to the hard drive. So Sony's making it easy to upgrade the hard drive.
Yes. Yeah.
That's nice. Standard SATA 2 hard drive in there.
Yeah.
Not a great driver, but you're busy. You're busy. Yeah. You're doing other things. You're doing a review.
And I'm not seeing any other people on the road right here.
That's because they left a long time ago. They're already in Santa Monica.
Oh, here's one up ahead.
Oh, good.
I'll catch him.
I think that's the...
Oh, there's a pursuit going on up here.
So. Oh, look at that. There you go.
I hit the median. Oh, that's not good. There we go. I'm
we back should put it. You know, people are going to compare this as I did to Forza 5, which is the new driving game for the Xbox One. That's designed to look like real cars. This is designed to be.
It's more of an arcade game.
Yeah. Fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right. So, we like the. there you go. That's hard to do that while you're reviewing. I understand. Yeah, I'm doing the Xbox One next week, and I'm going to be worse, so don't worry about it. So, you like the graphics?
Yes.
The new controller you think is better?
Yes, I like the new controller much more, and the light is cool that has on the end here.
Yeah, I love the design of the PS3. Still can sit on its side as well as flat, right?
Yes, they have a stand so it can stand vertically that's sold separately.
And I think this will look nice in your home theater.
Yeah, and it's smaller than the PS3.
Yeah.
And definitely smaller than the Xbox.
Yeah.
The one con I have is it's not backward compatible, so I still have to have my PS3 hooked up. So I can finish The Last of Us and Grand Theft Auto 5.
I think that word has gone out on both the Xbox One and PS4, but it's really important to underscore this. None of your existing games as it stands will play on this thing.
Which is different than when the PS2 and the PS3 came out.
That's right. Maybe that the companies are planning some way of streaming your old games or something like that, but we haven't seen any details on that.
Yeah.
So right now, you're going to either keep your PS3 and finish those games. Last of Us is great.
Yeah.
Not available for this, though, yet.
Not yet. I don't know if they're going to do a PS4 version, but some companies have announced upgrades where for $10 you can upgrade your PS3 version of
if you go through
Assassin's Creed or Call of Duty Ghosts, you can get the PS4
version. In effect, you're selling your old version because you're giving them the old disc and they'll give you the new one for $10.
Yeah, but you can do that right through the PlayStation Store and download the new version.
How's the battery life on these? The same?
It seems to be less
than I noticed you ran out a little prematurely.
Yeah, no, I had been playing with that controller last night, too.
Okay. So you got a a good evening's worth of play out of it before it ran out.
They look the same. I couldn't tell which one was which.
Well,
I grabbed the wrong one.
Now we know. All right, well, let's get the quick pros and cons and your recommendation.
All right, the pros, it's priced $100 less than the Xbox One. So it seems to be a good price point. Improved controllers.
That's $399, right?
Yes, $399.
Yeah.
Improved controllers and a smaller system with an elegant interface and the replaceable hard drive. As for the cons, it's not backwards compatible. For multiplayer, PlayStation Plus is required. So it's going to run about $50 a year. And the music limitations we mentioned.
Right.
So buy, try, or don't buy. I would give this a buy.
Well, why not?
But wait until there's games that you want to play.
Yeah. Some really good games come out this spring.
Yeah, and Destiny next year I want on the PS4.
Yeah. Uncharted, which is a Sony classic, is going to be Uncharted 4, right? Or 3? I think it's 4 now.
It's 4.
Right? Holy cow. Yeah, good. And Watch Dogs will be out eventually, too, and I'm very excited about that. But that's going to be on both platforms. Thank you, Patrick Delahanty. Patrick's our house programmer and wizard, and we really appreciate having him around. The PlayStation 4 from Sony, $299, is a buy.
Yes.
Did I say that right,
$299?
$399. Wishful thinking. $399, still a buy.
I'm Maya's actor, and today I've got here the Lenovo Yoga 2 Pro. Now, if it's a yoga, you know it's got that hinge. It's a 13.3-inch screen. It's got that crazy hinge. It can be a tablet if you want it to be. Not exactly something that you probably use as a tablet because it's a 13.3-inch display. You do have the keyboard on the back here, so it does make it a little bit strange. But this guy is super powerful. It's got the latest generation Intel Haswell processors. This one is actually an i7, so this thing screams 8 gigabytes of RAM in this model. The Lenovo Yoga 2 Pro starts at around $929. This model is about $1,300. It also comes in an orange clementine color if you want. This is the silver. If you go around this device, the whole device is covered in this like kind of rubberized soft touch kind of material. Makes it easy to hold, kind of resists fingerprints. The other thing is when you are using the Yoga in its many modes, it protects the screen a bit. Now when it comes to the screen, it is absolutely incredibly gorgeous. 3200 by 1800 resolution. It's just fantastic when it comes to Windows 8. It starts at $929, and this crazy screen, the 3200 by 1800, is on all of the devices. It's not like when you get the lower end version, you get a 1366 by 768. You're getting this crazy display, even with the lowest end model. That's why it's pro, I guess. Windows 8 is really text-heavy, so a high-res screen makes text really easy to read on something like this. It is just a phenomenal-looking screen. However, software hasn't caught up exactly to this device, a screen like this. Let me go into Chrome to show you what that's like. Now, this is Chrome running on this device. I haven't done anything weird to this. If I hit Control-0, this is how it displays because this is actually filling in the resolution. Again, this is 3200 by 1800, so Chrome has a ways to go when it comes to displays like this. So it might be strange at first. You can just, you know, hit Control plus until it looks normal, but you can see I've zoomed in 250% because that's just wacky. Thankfully, Microsoft's own Internet Explorer doesn't act like this when it comes to this Windows 8 device. On top of that, Lenovo added some software. They called it Yoga Pix. So if you wanted to find applications specific for the different usages here as a laptop and the show mode, this is the other yoga mode, but they call it stand mode. That would be when you want to watch TV and you watch it like that. And there's also the tent mode. If I click that, it'll actually give me a set of different applications for when it's like this in tent mode. So we're in tent mode, so I can go ahead and come right into this and go into Windows. If I go into the start screen, because I have it in tent mode. The keyboard is turned off, by the way. That's something people are concerned about. If you got this, if you're holding it as a tablet like this, you're like, oh, I'm going to touch the keyboard. It's going to mess with this. The keyboard is off once you have it set this way. So I can keep tapping here and it doesn't work. That's a good thing. You want that rejection. It is a little strange because you're touching buttons there, but That's just a quibble. For ports, we've got a USB here. We've got a headphone jack combination with mic jack. We've got a volume rocker. And we have this switch, which will turn off auto-rotate. So you can accidentally hit this. It's not recessed, so you can easily hit it. Also, they have the unusual selection of putting the power button over here. You can see it actually glowing, letting you know that this is where the power is. Lenovo says it's recessed, so you don't accidentally turn it on in your bag. Other side, you got that power port, we've got a USB 3, HDMI, and a full SD card slot. And there's really not a whole lot else to it because it is an Ultrabook. You can see this thing is really responsive. Considering this is using Intel integrated graphics to push this kind of resolution, it's surprisingly fast, very snappy. Performance-wise, just terrific. Obviously, it's getting a ton of fingerprints. The Lenovo Yoga 2 Pro also supports up to 10 points of multi-touch. So if you want to get lots of hands on there, you could. This laptop packs a 4-cell battery. It would have been nicer to have a larger battery in here to get some better battery life. On to the pros and cons. When it comes to the pros of this device, it is absolutely gorgeous. It's so thin, so light. It's under 3 pounds. That display is just beautiful. If you look at other displays after it, your eyes will be ruined. I'm not kidding, because this is fantastic. Great reproduction right there. You've also got crazy fast processor in here because it's the latest Intel processor. This model, again, with the i7, just screams 8 gigabytes of RAM. Really great. It's light, but it's sturdy. It's very sturdy feeling. You never feel like you're going to bust it. Keyboard's very good. It's a Lenovo, so it's quite good there. Trackpad supports all the things you want it to. You'll see this, the charms come up, no problem. The gestures that Microsoft wants you to be able to use on the touchpad work quite well as this touchscreen. Very responsive touchscreen. On the cons, these are small quibbles here. It is slightly awkward as a tablet because you do have these keys. I don't know how often you'd use it as a tablet, though, because it is such a large device. But I do know Lenovo did come up with a better version of this for the ThinkPads. I would have liked the tray to come up so it fell flat. And another little quibble, the power button is in a kind of a weird spot. Just get used to that over time. And this is a super minor quibble. This little shift key on the right side, I would prefer that to be a full size. So if this is how I'm reaching for cons, you're going to hear something you don't hear from me very often. The Lenovo Yoga 2 Pro is a buy because it's a fantastic device. I really enjoyed using it. Super fast, super light, and performance is great. I'm Ayaz Akhtar, and this is the Lenovo Yoga 2 Pro.
Yeah, baby. Well, I was thinking after the show, hi. Welcome back. Thank you, Ayaz Akhtar. Ayaz is the host of TNT, of course, Monday through Friday on the Twit Network, and every Thursday of Know How, where he shows you how to do all those things you always wanted to do. You like my phone? It's really big. It's really red. It's really new from Nokia. We decided to let Tony Wang take a look at the Nokia Lumia 1520. Tony?
I'm Tony Wayne for Twit, and before you buy, and today I'm reviewing the Nokia Lumia 1520 Windows Phone. The 1520 is the latest phone from Nokia, and it is huge. It is 6 inches, and it's not 5.95 like the competition. It's actually 6 inches. Just to put things in perspective, it's the same size as the HTC One Max, and it's bigger than the Galaxy Note 3 in terms of footprint. So what do you get with this huge package? You get a clear black IPS LCD display that's readable in any light condition, even in direct sunlight. It's 1080p. It's the first Windows phone to have 1080p, but it's definitely not the last. On the back of the phone, you'll see 3 connectors for optional wireless charging cover, which is not available yet, and it is also not the built-in Qi standard that Nokia usually has. It is PMA in America. On the back, you'll find a f2.4 Carl Zeiss 1 2.5-inch sensor, which is smaller than the 1020, but it is definitely no slouch. You can still do 2x lossless digital zoom on the 1520. The equivalent millimeter is 26 millimeters, so it is pretty wide. With a huge 6-inch display, it's actually very, very easy to compose your photos. And with a dedicated camera button, you probably won't miss a beat trying to capture that moment. And if you have a subject in motion, you have dual LED to help you stop it. The review that I have here is red, and it's a glossy plastic red, which is
gorgeous, but it just attracts a lot of dirt and lint and fingerprints. The phone's powered by Qualcomm's latest Snapdragon 800 quad-core 2.2 gig processor and 2 gigs of RAM. The phone does come with 16 gigabytes or 32 gig built-in storage, but only 16 is available in America. And you can always have micro SD expansion up to 64 gigabytes. But keep in mind that you can't store all the software on there. It's usually only used for media. The phone has crazy battery life, 3,400 milliamp per hour. To put that in perspective, this phone was in standby since this morning for about 4 hours and it drained 3%. So Nokia calls this a monoblock touch design, which is pretty much the standard now for Nokia's phone design, and it is gorgeous. Pros and cons of the Nokia Lumia 1520. It's 6 inches. There's so much real estate on the phone itself, on the home screen, that it actually takes advantage of all the active widgets, the live tiles, and you really don't have to scroll much on the home screen anymore. Another pro is the 20 megapixel 2x lossless zoom pure view camera with OIS. And the build quality, of course, is Nokia, so you know you're going to be getting a really solid phone. And if you look at the display around the edges, this phone is actually built like a tablet. There's actually a rubber trim piece around the display where it meets the body, just like the iPad. Con of the phone, one con I've noticed is that the glossy plastic actually picks up a lot of unwanted dirt and cat hair. So buy, try, or don't buy for Nokia Lumia 1520. It is definitely a buy. It is the highest spec Windows phone, and it is the best camera in its class, and it's awesome. I'm Tony for Twitter Before You Buy, and this is the Nokia Lumia 1520.
So you know, we put the TriCaster in. It's pretty cool, right? I guess we're back. So, Russell, I should hang up on you because we're done having our business discussion over the Xbox. Xbox, hang up. Xbox, hang up. There, okay. It worked, okay. Xbox, call Radford Castro. Call Radford Castro. Maybe the PBS Xbox is too much. Xbox, call Radford Castro.
Radford Castro!
Nick! Look,
Xbox, call Radford Castro.
Her name's Honey.
Okay, well, that didn't work.
1520. And now, as you might have guessed, we're taking a look at the Xbox One.
Oh,
it's going to call Radford Castro now.
Controller.
So when you think about a game console like the PS4, the Xbox One, what do you think about? You think about games. These are some of the launch day games. A couple of launch exclusives, Rise, Son of Rome, Dead Rising 3. And, of course, games that are on all the platforms, including Call of Duty Ghost. But the truth is, a lot of what the Xbox One from Microsoft does is more than gaming. It's gaming plus. For instance, we're using the Skype right now. And by the way, watch, go to, see, you see the Skype screen, our Skype picture in the lower inset? Watch, if I get out of the shot here, I got to hide from the Kinect.
I'll go down.
It's going to slowly zoom over to wherever Alex is. And I got it's hard to see, get it. Yeah. See, it's following Alex around.
Now, if you walk back in, it'll
it's doing that digitally. It also knows that I'm here. And we're going to show you that in a second. Hey, Radford, see you later. Thanks for joining us. But this is an amazing thing,
Xbox,
to sit in your living room. Xbox.
Xbox, hang up. Good enough. Okay.
It's listening to you.
All right.
This is the Kinect module. One of the reasons the Xbox costs $500, $100 more than the PS4, is this. This is a requirement. You can no longer buy an Xbox without the Kinect console, the Kinect module. This is a camera over here. It also has an array mic here. It's listening all the time, and it's on all the time. Now, that scares some people. And if it scares you, you probably shouldn't buy this device. Of course, you can always disconnect it. But a lot of the features and a lot of the appeal to me of the Xbox is the Kinect. So let's put it back over here where we set it up. When you move the Kinect, you're supposed to reconfigure it. And I may have screwed this up.
Put it back where it was. And
put it pretty much where it was and hope that
it... So this is actually what the Kinect sees. So this is just the regular RGB stuff.
And notice it knows... Oh, it doesn't know me.
Doesn't know you.
Is it going to know you?
Yeah, it might. We'll see. So it's also got infrared that it's tracking and also depth. So if my hand's up close...
It's a Z-axis as
yeah,
well.
It'll change color depending on the depth of it. But let's try here. If you
I'm too far away, now, probably.
And go ahead and I'll step out of the way, and then you sign in and press the button. It should go back to you.
Xbox, go home. It knows that it's me, that I'm logged in. This is the new Xbox controller, very similar to the old one. I think the biggest improvement is a better, much better D-pad, and no longer a bulge for the batteries. These batteries, by the way, are the same batteries that came with the Xbox, the alkaline batteries I installed when I got it on day one, which was last Friday. And I expect it to last a few more days. This is with pretty heavy use. These batteries last well, although I will be using rechargeable batteries in here. It does have a connector. A USB connector that's not for charging. That is just for controlling it. If the batteries die, you can still play a game by being connected directly to the USB panel.
It's for charging if you have the Play and Charge kit.
Pardon me?
There's a Play and Charge kit that you can buy that's got
you can buy something that will add it in. Yeah, I just, you know what? I just have a nickel metal hydride recharger, and I just keep batteries ready to go. This is the Xbox console. By the way, one thing really improved. Listen carefully. Do you hear anything? On the old Xbox 360, you would have heard a jet engine taking off. One big muffin fan in here keeps it, not only keeps it cool, but keeps it cool very quietly. Even when I'm using the disc, I don't hear a lot of noise. You hear the normal, you know, access noise. But this is actually a very quiet machine, which makes it very suitable for the living room. Unlike the PlayStation 4, the Xbox One's power supply is external. Some people don't like that. You know, there's an advantage to it. It keeps the thermal... you know, the heat out of the box. I don't mind it. It's behind my credenza where my TV is. It's out of the way. That's fine. But let's really talk about what the Xbox does best, which is, of course, play games and, frankly, I'm going to take my earpiece out. It's driving me crazy here. Sorry about that. Play games. There we go. Oh, it's so quiet. Play games and as a media center in your home. I just think this is a phenomenal device for the living room. The ability to make Skype calls is phenomenal. Xbox Home. Xbox. Hello, Xbox. This is giving me a list, by the way, of all the commands I can say. Go home. Go home. Does not work perfectly, I admit, but it does work more often than not, and it's really nice to be able to watch a movie, for instance, and to pause it in the middle. I'll show you over here. These are my pinned icons. YouTube, Skype. It does support Netflix. It does support Hulu Plus. I've got Amazon Instant Video. In fact, let's watch real quickly some Amazon Instant Video on here, because one of the things I really like is that I can pause the video and resume it with my voice. If I get up, I want to answer the door. We'll sign. I'm not signed in. Well, we'll just have to do that another time. But if I want to get up, I can say Xbox pause. It'll stop the video. I can say Xbox play. It'll resume it. You have a lot of commands available that make it very much easier. But really, if you're going to buy it, you're going to buy it for the game. So let's talk a little bit about the games. Oh, one more thing I just wanted to show you real quickly. The Kinect can also be used to scan barcodes. And this is kind of a nice feature. A lot of times, for instance, Dead Rising 3 comes with a barcode with some additional information. I can say Xbox use code. I can even be in the middle of a game and do this right now. Xbox. Maybe not. Xbox. Hey, Xbox. Xbox. Use code. And then I can watch this. I love this feature. Just hold the QR code up to the camera here. And it adds it. I think that's pretty cool. Yeah, I think I'll take that day one exclusive for... Dead Rising 3. That was pretty neat. And so you don't enter in a lot of codes and stuff. Let's go back to Rise, Son of Rome. This is one of the Xbox exclusives. And one of the things people point out with the Xbox One compared to the PlayStation 4 is it isn't 1080p on many of the games, or any of the games as far as I can tell. But I have to say, it feels pretty smooth, pretty fluid, and it looks great. This is a fun game. You play a Roman centurion. There's the Emperor Nero. I've got to help him. All right, you want me to go in there, Nero? All right, let's do it. And I don't think you're going to look at this and say, even on a big screen, I watch this on my 55-inch OLED, I don't think you're going to say, oh, golly, the graphics are terrible on this. I think they're quite good. And it sure is a lot of fun to play. Oh, let's not show this violence. It's just too horrible, too violent for words. Oh, stop it. Oh, stop it. Oh, my God, the humanity. Press yellow, press blue, and he's gone. Anyway, a lot of fun. Okay, stop it. Xbox, home.
Go this, home.
Go, I'm sorry, I always say the wrong thing. Xbox, go home. Well, you can always press the home button to do that. You can also snap, by the way, which is fun. So you saw earlier Alex had a Skype call going on, but he was also watching live TV. That's one of the things that's really different about this, the ability to watch TV with this as an overlay. That's because the Xbox does something different. Like the old Google TV, it does a pass-through, so it's not going to take an additional HDMI input. The Xbox actually it takes the input from your cable or DirecTV box and passes it through to your TV. Oh, we never did set up the DirecTV on this one. Did we?
I did.
Oh, you're the man. So we're going to see how you can watch TV. I can snap. For instance, they have an NFL application. I can snap to the corner. We're watching TV. There you go. All right. So give me a command. Let's say Xbox.
Show guide.
Show guide. It doesn't hear me. I think because we moved it around, it's not hearing me as well as it used to.
Those were in a noisy, somewhat noisy studio.
Xbox, show guide. Show guide. I've been using this in my home environment, even with loud TV going on, and it works really well to be able to talk. You can say, Xbox, watch HBO. And it will jump to that channel. It actually knows what channels are available to me. It shows the programming guide. I can go to shows. I can go to channels. We're not getting the best results in here. I think it's because probably I need to resync this after moving the connect around. Xbox, watch KGO. Guess we don't have HBO on here. But you see, it gives you a list in green of things you can watch. Watch ABC.
I don't think the infrared is bouncing.
That's another issue. All right, let's talk about that. This really worked really well. You tell it what receivers you have, what cable box or satellite box you have, what TV you have, and then it floods the room with infrared and bounces it off. Now, our direct TV box is nowhere in the infrared line of sight from this device, so it's not going to be able to control that. That makes sense.
It was earlier, so...
Where is our... It's our box is where? It's right there. Oh, it's down there? All right. But it does, in fact, work quite well to control the receiver. When I say Xbox turn on, it turns on everything. I can change channels directly. And at home, it works quite well. There were a few little glitches. One, my very recent Samsung OLED TV, it didn't know about that. I've heard from some people that the Pioneer Kuro TVs, it doesn't have that. But these can all be updated very simply in software by Microsoft. It works very well. It's a universal remote control. If you decide you don't want to use voice control, you can, of course, always use the Xbox controller. And what I really like is Microsoft has made a free app, a smart glass app, available on every platform, iOS, Android, and, of course, on Windows Phone that lets me do a lot of things directly. You know, let me do it on the big one here. I got the Lumia 1520. We can run the smart glass app on here. You'd be able to see it a little bit better. I can see everything that's going on. I can control it. I even have a remote control right here, so I could press this to go back to Xbox Home. I should be able to. I wonder what's going on. You know, I have a feeling that we have lost connectivity with this Xbox. It knows we're watching TV. I could pause it. I should be able to pause it.
We don't have a DVR. So the pausing and stuff only works
That's with the DVR.
DVR
I think, yeah, and I also think this is not seeing it very well. Oh, sorry. Let's try that again here. You see, it's not...
Well, you are home.
Oh, I am home. I didn't notice.
everything's around there.
Everything's live inside the home thing. There are some people who are talking about the fact that it is like the PlayStation 4, a very horizontal layout. And I guess as you add more things, depending and stuff, it may start to fill up. But I find that you have pretty good control of what you want to use. There's some really great apps on here. This is the NFL app, which allows you to watch a lot of NFL video. You can say what your favorite team is. It's not so much different from going to NFL.com, except it's a lean-back experience. It's on the big-screen TV. I have to say, there are a lot of negatives on the Xbox. As you can see, it's not perfect yet. But the promise of this being more than a game machine, and I've played all these games, by the way, and had a lot of fun doing it. The promise of it being more than a game machine is really exciting. And this is something that really belongs in my living room and can do so many things. I don't need a Roku or an Apple TV. You can't watch iTunes, obviously, but if you watch Amazon, you can use that. You can keep track of your friends and their achievements. You can have your gamer avatar. You can see... This is Alex, who's apparently doing all of this stuff. Oh, wait a minute. That's because we were doing it. But I can also scroll down and see what iJustine. She's playing Forza Motorsports. Paul Thurrott, he can't stop playing Call of Duty. It's really fun to be able to see your friends, see how they're doing. It's very social. I can, as I'm playing a game, for instance, record 30 seconds of video. What's the command? Xbox, save this video, something like that?
Record that.
And it will take the 30 seconds that just went by, save it, and upload it automatically to its upload site. They don't support Twitch.tv yet. They don't support 3D Blu-ray yet, but they are presumably going to add that in the future. Blu-ray movies play very well on this. That's another big asset added to the Xbox One. All right, I know this has gone on and on. In fact, I haven't even really scratched the surface of all it can do. But let me give you the pros and cons of the Xbox One. In terms of pros, it's a lot quieter and a lot cooler operation. I think we could safely say the red ring of death is dead. It also has a Blu-ray player finally, which means I can use this as my Blu-ray player. No 3D yet, but that's coming soon, I'm sure. I love the integration with my home theater. It did it flawlessly and easily, including remote control. It becomes, in effect, a universal remote control that allows you to use your iPhone, your Android phone, or your computer to control it via smart glass, Microsoft second screen technology. The games are pretty playable, you know. But that is, if we talk about cons, is the real con. You cannot play Xbox 360 games on this, and that means you have to play the games that have come out specifically for this. And right now, that's fewer than 20 games. There'll be more, I'm sure, in time. But it is somewhat of a limitation. If the games you see are games you want to play, that's a good sign. Of course, they do have some of the bigger titles. Call of Duty: Ghosts and Battlefield 4 are really fun to play on here. And the games that are exclusive to Xbox, like Rise, Son of Rome, and Dead Rising 3 are also, I think, quite good. I haven't played the Zumba game yet. I can't speak for that. I have played some of the Kinect games, and there are downloadable games. I have the Kinect Rivals, which is a sports game. And that's another pro on this, is that the new Kinect, completely redesigned, doesn't have many of the downsides of the old one. The old one, you had to move furniture out of the way. You had to be 10 feet away from it. You can do the Kinect right up next to it now, and that's a lot of fun. So all in all, I have to say this is a definite buy. I am very happy I got the Xbox One. When I started hearing about PlayStation 4 and all the great things it could do, I started to feel a little bit bad that maybe I'd chosen the wrong device. I'm very excited. I think the Xbox One is great out of the box and is getting better all the time. Here's all the commands. Microsoft published this today, a list of the Xbox commands, and I guess I'm just going to have to use this as a cheat sheet for a while. Let's see. Go ahead.
Xbox, show my stuff. It's not recognized.
It heard Xbox. It didn't hear show my stuff.
But it went to your home. I don't know if it's because I'm not usually signing up your box.
Now, this is kind of cool. So when you come in and sit down, it can recognize up to 6 people. Facial recognition means that it will know it's Alex. It should, in theory, show Alex's Xbox home. There it is. Configured. Now, that's kind of amazing. That is all of your pinned stuff, all of your apps.
So I'm going to pass the controller to you, and then you hit the home button.
And see if it goes back to me, right? We've messed with this a little bit because, and now I'm logged back in. You see me, and this is my unique home screen. Things like that make this very interesting. When you go over to somebody's house who has an Xbox One, if you have an Xbox One, it'll know about your games. It'll know about your movies. It'll know about your login. It'll automatically recognize. You can recognize 6 people in the room, put their names over each of them, and as you hand off the controller, or you have, it comes with only one controller, but if you have more than one controller, it allows you to participate together in a very easy, fluid way. I feel like this is the beginning of something big. Not exactly perfect yet, but I think very impressive. A definite buy, even at $500. And, of course, I expect in the years to come it'll get less expensive. They'll probably be slimline and, of course, a lot more games. Really a really nice game machine. Well, that's it for this special holiday edition of Before You Buy. We'll be back next week, our New Year's Eve special. And then all next year with Father Robert Ballester. He's going to be hosting Before You Buy.
This is a fun show to do. I hope you enjoy the product reviews all year long. And remember, you've got to watch before you buy. See you later. Bye-bye.